All right, hello, and welcome to another microbrew episode of the Three Drinks In podcast. Talking to you guys once again about Star Trek Discovery, this time episode 12. Before we do, though, I'm going to remind you that we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for Three Drinks In podcast. You'll easily find us. Hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And while you're there, leave us a review or at the very least a rating. We'd really appreciate that. You can follow us on Twitter at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. That's at 3 Drinks In Pod. 3 Drinks In Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And all questions and concerns can be sent to 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. So episode 12. The big one.
Vaulting ambition. Yes.
Right. There have been a lot of big ones, though. Like, every episode is designed to be like, and then that happens, which you've been waiting for or not the whole time. So, like, episode 11 was the big reveal where we find out that Tyler is really Volk. And this is the big reveal. We find out that this guy is still a dick, but now you know why he's a dick.
But now you know why.
And
the fan theory was correct.
Yeah. Apparently somebody had said this to Jason Isaacs, who, I don't know if he's really into this job, but he's dealing with a lot of press about this show. So there's constantly quotes from Jason Isaacs about, you know, him being a dick to fans who are jerks about the fact that the lady's black or a lady. And him being like, oh, well, good for them. They're guessing all this stuff. They won't guess at all, though. And, like, he seems to be very engaged with the media about different fan reactions and suppositions about what's going on. So, interesting. We won't do a recap of the show. If you're paying attention to this podcast, you've watched the episode, so we're not going to do the whole thing.
Yeah, I assume that we're basically doing that Myra show after Trek, but just without any interesting people or guests. So.
Have you watched the Matt Myra show?
I watched some of the last one.
I meant to, and I forgot about it.
They're long. It was like longer than the episode. I was like, I'm not going to watch 37 minutes of this. But
yeah, I can appreciate why they do it, because we're doing the same thing. You know, but differently, I think.
Because, well, we don't have Jonathan Frakes.
No, we don't have Jonathan Frakes.
Which is what I wanted to watch.
Because he's great. He just seems like we met him at the convention, and what a nice guy Jonathan Frakes seemed to be.
And my favorite was when they asked him, like, we never got to see Amira Riker, but what do you think he'd be like? Jonathan Frakes was like, he'd probably sit down differently because of his back.
Oh right, yeah, the Riker maneuver is what they called it.
Where he had to like step over stools and chairs because he couldn't approach them and sit because he would hurt his back.
Yeah, there's something called the Groucho maneuver. It's not really a maneuver. To Groucho is a verb. Which it's just like the way you kind of saddle into a chair on screen. And I'm not quite sure how it's done. I was told that I do it when I sit down, because I think you have to pull your pants up a little bit. Like, so like men years ago used to wear their pants very high, and so when they would sit down, they'd have to take their hands, place them on their pants, and pinch them up a little bit, like on your thigh. You pull up a little bit, and then that way you won't sort of rip them as you bend your knees. And then as men wore pants that were baggier and more forgiving, that went away. But generally it doesn't. That's how I sit down. I don't know why. And so I did that once when I was being filmed for something, and they go, oh, you did that naturally. I went, I did. And they went, yeah, like that's how you sit down on screen. I went, okay. So I guess he can't do that. And so therefore he had to like horse over the saddle up to the chair and get on it like it's a trick pony. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he had an interesting style of sitting.
Yeah, anyway.
But, so, yeah, our shows are different than those shows.
Well, their shows are paid for by the show they're talking about, right?
Basically.
Like CBS, I know when Chris Hardwick started doing this. Was it Talking Bad or Talking Dead was the first one?
Yeah, the Talking Dead show.
Talking Dead. Yeah. So basically, AMC would hire him to bring the cast out and talk to fans about the show that everyone just watched theoretically, and it was done live too.
Right.
Like they would film that right after it aired, and everyone presumably watched the episode in that little theater, and then they brought the cast out. I always thought that was a really stupid thing to do, because you're not going to editorialize. You're just going to advertise the show that we all just watched for an additional 35, 40 minutes. And they would talk about how great it was and where it was going and isn't it interesting. And yeah, but no one's going to say, well, I thought that was kind of stupid.
Well, it's not a criticism of anything.
Right. So what is it?
Pointing out what we just saw.
Right. So it's just...
Yeah.
Cheerleading. So like
You and I will criticize it. I mean, you don't like it, but
no,
we'll also point out things that, like, well, that really didn't work well, and maybe they could have done this, and I wonder what's going to happen next. And I was watching the one with Aftertrack, and they had one of the writers on there via Skype, and he was just talking about, you know, all the grief people were giving us that the captains don't really act like this. You're right, because he's not the captain. He's a doppelganger of the person we're supposed to have been watching.
Right.
And he was kind of like, get off my back about it, okay? Here's the reason why he's a jerk. I was like, I could see why he'd be a little defensive. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, it's... There's a point to be made. Just, you know, like... And yet... One of the things you pointed out was that they never answer any questions. This is just one incredibly long and tedious setup for nothing. They're just driving the bus down the highway, and new things hop on at different points, and they kind of explain things, but they also, this raises 400 more questions about what is going on. I mean, this whole thing, in the episode, there's really three different things going on. There's the Lieutenant Stamets thing going on, which is confusing and dumb and stupid. There's the Volk-Lorel angle, which is confusing and dumb and stupid. And then there's the Michael and Lorca and Emperor story, which is disturbing, confusing, and it's not necessarily dumb and stupid, because it does answer some of our questions about what's going on, but it raises 10 times as many as just to make the confusing aspect so huge. And I get some satisfaction of going, oh, look, yeah, that's why these things are the way they are. But now I have 1,000 questions that, like, they're not going to get to everything. There's not enough time. It's just about baiting you and keeping you watching. So basically, they wanted to design a streaming service to compete with Netflix and Amazon. And in doing that, they kind of did the perfect thing, they think at least. We'll take a property with a huge built-in audience and we'll make it similar enough to keep some of them mollified and different enough to piss off enough people, but also bring in new folks. And then we'll keep it going like Lost, where we're going to raise questions and make it interesting for no reason as often as possible to keep people hooked in, so they have to tune in next week and they have to maintain their subscription during the time that the show is not airing. That seems to be the business model for this show. And that insults me, and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not writing a show. They're writing a business strategy.
Okay.
So
what? Should we just end this and stop doing these?
Podcast over. Upturns the table and just walks out.
So my wife was like, oh, you're doing the Star Trek one again, huh? I was like, yeah, you know, every week. She's like, but you don't even like that show. I'm like, I like it enough. I keep watching it.
There would have to be significant attempts made in the next three episodes to do something with this story to really keep me going for another season of this. I certainly can't do this podcast like this every week. Yeah. After this.
Yeah, this is an experiment on our part.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at it very much like we're gonna, like a juggler who starts off with like three balls, and then they throw in scarves, and then they throw in bowling balls, and now they've got chainsaws in the air too. And if they're not careful, all this shit will fall on them and chop their heads off. You know?
Yeah.
That's right. Like, you were texting me earlier in the week, and I was just like, yeah, that was interesting, I guess. Okay, we find out that Lorca's is an evil version of Lorca. But in this episode, the first thing I noticed, because it was Sunday night, and I was like, how long is this going to take? And it's only 35 minutes. I'm like, wow, that's short. That's like much shorter than the other episodes.
Was it? I don't think I was half sick when I watched this. I was on cold medicine, so I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, it was very short. And they threw the whole new thing in with Stamets meets his doppelganger, who's also the same mycelium expert. You know, I've been studying this thing too, and I need your help to get out. And I was like, okay, now we have a whole nother thing in here. And we had to have the tearful goodbye with the boyfriend.
Yeah, the boyfriend who knew things. Like, because for a while I was like, what is this guy? He's dead. What is he doing in here? And then I thought, well, maybe he's just part of Stamets's brain, because he watched him die, but he really couldn't articulate anything because he was in that weird fugue state.
But yeah, that's my guess.
But then he said something to Stamets about doppelganger, because Stamets doesn't know where they are. He's been in this thing since they got there. So he's out of the loop, and then because he doesn't know that this guy's really evil, even though, you know. So, but then his partner says to him, well, don't feel bad about him. He's evil, and he's exploited this for his own purposes. How does he know that?
Magic.
I mean, that,
no, I don't know.
That really pissed me off, because I was like, I can understand in this sort of delirious state where he's coming to terms with whatever, and she's doing all these experiments to rewrite his brain to get him back to normal, that he would have a dream involving this guy who he observed dying but couldn't do anything about, and then they would have that moment where they said goodbye to each other, which was really kind of nice. It's the only acting going on in the show. It's, you know, it's not great, but it's pretty good. But then he threw that line in there. I'm like, well, how does he know that? It doesn't make any sense.
Is that because when he died, maybe before he was telling Paul, like, you know, he talked to people in comas? I don't know. You know.
No, that's just stupid. It's just lazy and dumb. Well, let's just, before we get into the whole Lorca thing, I want to just go back to Tyler for a minute, who now, that seems to be an afterthought completely, the whole, you know, really, well, Klingon thing.
That's the bowling balls in the air, now, but now we have the chainsaws in the air.
Right.
Like,
when Laurel goes in and does that, like, you know, laser beams finger thing, and then he wakes up as Tyler, not as Volk, is she sacrificing Volk?
No, why would she do that?
Right? There's no reason to do that. He's your mole. He's your spy. He didn't accomplish anything in being Tyler. And now she's, and like, they're, like, what tall guy goes to him and says, goes to her and says, you got to help him. He's dying. We can't fix this guy. You're the only one that can. She at first refuses, and then he brings the guy into the cell with her and says, well, here he is, because we can't treat him, and he's going to kill somebody. So you're going to have to watch him die in front of you. And then she agrees to help him. And it seemed like they were forcing her to make a decision to let Volk go and let the guy be Tyler forever now.
I just thought she was trying to settle him down, like fix the thing, fix the disparity. Maybe he's now just a spy again. Yeah, you don't really know.
Yeah, you don't really know.
I didn't understand what the point of saving him was. Like, they by then they knew he was a spy. Okay, this guy is a spy. And then she admits, the real Ash Tyler died, and we just took everything, his identity from him. and threw it on top of this Klingon so he looks like him. Okay, so why are we trying so hard to save him? He's a bad guy, isn't he?
It's possible that in her description of what they did to complete the facade was they imprinted his brain patterns onto this guy. Basically, what they said was that, it's kind of metaphysical if you think about it, but they made him into the other person.
Okay.
I think that is something that is so far beyond, I mean, like, looking at it from a sci-fi point of view and a Star Trek point of view, that is such unbelievably complex technology that, you know, if we're in the past from where the Star Trek canon is, you know, it just seems like what you're doing now is you can take someone back from the dead and just stick their brain in something. It's like Get Out, but for Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it poses a sort of interesting moral dilemma for the Starfleet crew to say, well, is he Volk anymore? If they've completely changed his physiology and imprinted this guy's brain on him, what is this thing? Is he human? Is he Klingon? Is he Volk? Is he Tyler? That becomes a kind of interesting dilemma in and of itself. They're not really exploring any of that. They're kind of shoving it into this alongside the other crap going on. But that's the only reason I can think of as why they wouldn't just throw the guy out the airlock. Is because of how she's described what she did to him, and because of his own behavior, where he doesn't know who he is half the time, and the other half the time he's trying to kill people, that maybe you can save the real Tyler by having him live on in this guy. You know, it's as a bioethical question, it's very interesting, and it's kind of what Star Trek is about in a lot of ways. What good episodes that focused on science fiction were these sort of ethical questions as they relate to fictional technology. But we're not really going to do that here. We're just going to do some laser brain things and then move on to the next topic.
We just sort of just made all that up on the spot. Like, I don't know if that's what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
I assume they took his memories and his ID and stuck him in there. And they were like,
full of shit.
You know, and they were like, you got to fix it. We're not going to ask how you have to do it or what you have to do. We're just going to give you these magic gloves that fix his brain. So I'm so confused. We just don't ever get any answers.
No. So then there's the thing where the Emperor is all excited to see Michael. And then she's excited. And then she's like, I'm going to torture you, Lorca, until whatever. And then Michael, you're apparently my adopted kid and you're great. And then they go to dinner where they eat that guy. Did she pick the Mirror Universe Saru?
No, a different one.
I couldn't figure out what they were doing for a while. I was like, why does she? And like, I also couldn't tell if he was even one of those three guys standing there because they all kind of looked the same.
They all look the same, yeah.
And like Kelpian wasn't, like, I didn't catch that right away. And then she goes, have some ganglia. I went, oh my God, they're eating him.
Yeah. That was one of the things people caught when they went back and looked at older episodes. And there's a scene where Lorca's eating Kelpian in his ready room. And you wouldn't know it at the time, but like some intrepid nerd went ahead and put the pictures side by side and they were exactly the same thing. And they're like, oh my God, that's a hidden clue. We didn't realize he was eating that.
It's not a hidden clue. It's only a clue if you don't know what the word clue means, then it's a clue, sure.
No, but it shows you what he's like. Apparently that they eat them over there.
God.
Bleh. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not necessary. Anyway. So, but then she kills all those guys in the room when Michael was just like, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to tell you.
As I roll my eyes, like, oh, God, this is so dumb.
Yeah. Like, so she just tells her, I'm not from here.
Yeah.
And
last minute effort, I suppose. Like, okay, look, you're about to stab me in the face with a sword because we're in space. It's not me. I'm somebody else. Like, okay, she's desperate. She's throwing up a Hail Mary. And I thought it was interesting. Like, yeah, you're from the Federation of Planets. I've heard about you in the database. Like, it's known to us. A few select people know about this. Why? But why did she kill those other people?
They all, yeah, except for that one guy. You clean it up. Why did that so guy stupid. Have to clean it up? Why don't you just, like, if you're the supreme leader of this entire crazy empire, why would anybody ask you why you murdered 12 people right in, like,
he already had the lines, so they're like, if we give him all the lines, we won't have to pay the others.
That's true. That's true. Little known fact, unless you speak, you're technically considered to be living scenery.
Yeah, that's why they don't, it's not actual dialogue, you know. You don't get paid until you say something.
Right. Otherwise, you're a chair for all they care.
Yeah, your backdrop.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know why she killed them.
So then she kills all those guys for seemingly no reason, and then explains to the audience, she must have looked into the camera and delivered the next 10 minutes worth of dialogue, and said that in her universe, her Michael was an adopted child that she was grooming, and Lorca was like her right-hand man, mm-hmm. and behaved like her father until he pulled a Woody Allen and seduced her, and they were going to conspire to kill her and take over the empire?
Yep.
Okay. Did nobody else know that? Because when she showed up with him at the end, in the beginning of when they first get there, oh, it's great to see you again. And you, I'm going to kill you after some torture. But Michael, good to see you. Like, wouldn't it have been a big deal?
Yeah, no, it's not. It wasn't known that she was in on it. Because
okay.
they didn't know she was in on it. They thought he was the traitor, and that's why he had disappeared. And she went after him.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that she didn't go after him. She was with him the whole time. So they didn't expect her to come back. So when she shows up with him, they're like, oh, she's back. And the Emperor is like, oh, my God, she's back. And they're really plotting against me. So they didn't know that.
All right.
You know.
Well, Michael didn't. Lorca did.
Apparently. Well, he knows a lot and apparently kept his mouth shut all this time.
Yeah. So then she reveals that, you know, the only physical difference between the two Is that why it's so dark everywhere?
Oh my
why
God,
we're all falling over our shoes?
I hated that line. That was so stupid. Because I thought it was like the one interesting thing about the captain was that his eyes were damaged and he felt that he had to keep them that way as some sort of penance. Psychological depth, okay. And then it turns out they all can't see. And when they use a 60-watt bulb versus a 40-watt bulb, they have to, like, shield their eyes.
Wouldn't that be a significant physical disadvantage?
Yeah.
Wouldn't they all have sunglasses on?
Yeah. Or at least some sort of corrective surgery before you're, you know, we have that now. And that was another interesting thing that they pointed out, I saw on Twitter, you know, when the Emperor shows up and blows up all the rebels, and like Michael Burnham is like, oh, they didn't evacuate, I was trying to save them, and like the explosions happen on screen, she's the only one who looks at it. Everybody else does this, including Lorca. They all kind of like shield their eyes because they can't look at bright lights. And if, like, if everyone had been paying attention, you would have noticed that even he has to kind of, you know. But where did that come from all of a sudden? That's never been a thing.
No, they made that up.
Like, I could live with all the stupid mumbo jumbo that makes no sense. But, I mean, that's like, it affects everyone all the time, everywhere.
Yeah.
It's never brought up in any other episode that they need the lights to be dim because they can't see.
And we've been dealing with the mirror universe for a while. It's not a new thing.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of want to point out to people on the show, like, you're not creating anything, especially if you're going into the past. like there's this obsession with this show now that we maybe someone sat down and said, listen, we can't go into the future anymore. We really feel like we've exhausted creativity when it comes to this. That'd be a really shitty answer for why they decided to keep doing things in the past and not in the future. But you know, maybe that was what they did. But if that's the case, then you have to remind everyone, none of this is new. And it's hard to come up with new stuff. Just ask Seth MacFarlane how hard it is to come up with new stuff. But like, they seem to be like, well, if we can't think of anything new within the confines of what there already is, we'll just make some stuff up and we'll just say it was there. Like, this reminds me a lot of like a bad heist movie. Like, a bad heist movie doesn't bother to explain to you enough, but they think they are. And so when twists and turns show up, you're supposed to be surprised, but you're really just sort of confused or annoyed. And that kind of seems to be what's going on here. They go, whoa, did you notice this thing? No, and there was no way I ever would have. Like, I appreciate the fans that came up with this idea, but it wasn't because there was a scene where he was eating Kelpian or they all looked away at the same time of the bright lights. They thought he might be the Mirror Universe captain because he behaves like a douchebag the whole time. So the one overarching character point about the guy is the hand that gave it away. But it, you know, so all these subtle things they've been dropping here and there, they didn't really amount to a hill of beans because the thing that tipped their hand was just who the guy was, his main character trait.
Yeah. I'm just curious now, because we live in the age of the internet versus if we'd been watching The Next Generation, you know, where's it all going? And now we live in a time when shows are all going someplace. They have beginnings and endings instead of just this episodic feel. So I read all this stuff, you know, they tell people to be patient and Star Trek fans are not patient. And they say, it will all make sense. We will stick the landing. The canon will line up, you know, just the little deviations are fine. We don't care about that. But, you know, by the end of this series, however long it lasts, Kirk will be on the ship with Spock and everything will be fine. Because it takes place before that. Okay. But I'm just curious if that's really going to happen, because first of all, like, the main complaint was that I don't know what the show is about. Is it about Lorca? Is it about the Klingon War? Is it about Michael Burnham? There's no progression of anything. I'm not seeing any progression in that. Things happen that don't build or lead to anything else. Everything is still just going on and on and on. Things are happening to characters rather than them actively making choices that affect the outcome of things. So if we watch them go into the Mirror Universe, then we watch them talk to Rebels, which nothing comes of. Then we watch them talk to the Emperor, and nothing comes of that. It's just a day in the life every single day. It's boring.
Yeah.
You know, when is something going to have some sort of meaningful impact on everyone else that the characters themselves decide to do?
I don't think that they think of it like that. I think they're really convinced that if we just surprise the audience with new, you know, crazy things, we'll just do these huge bits of setup. I mean, huge bits of setup. If we're talking about doing little Easter eggs throughout the previous 11 episodes that you're not designed to see, they aren't supposed to have any meaning for you until we give you the big reveal. And we're just plodding along, waiting for the big reveal to happen. I think that these people are satisfied with that. They don't want to, or that they don't see this as something not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only thing that makes sense to me is that they feel that Michael Burnham learning stuff by being spoken to her out loud by people is an event.
Yeah. And that's a mistake that, I mean, I wrote an entire, my first novel was like that. And my friend Fran, he's also a writer, said the first thing, he was like, I like this, but your character has no agency in this. Everything happens to her. The same thing happens to Michael Burnham because she mutinies against her captain. That's the first thing we see her do. And then after that, she just gets bounced from one set to the next. Go here, go there, take this with you when you go and come back with it. And even at the end, when she comes face to face with the Emperor, she just goes, "It's not really me that you think it is." And then that, you know, the show goes on for 10 more minutes. She doesn't do anything. Do you see what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. She affects no change.
And Saru is the same way in that he had that one scene where he was like, I want to know what it takes to be a good captain. And he goes through the database of the records of good captains. And like, all right, well, this is a pretty ham-fisted way of doing it. But then that gets dropped. He just starts following orders. And then in these last few episodes, when he's in charge, he's just going by the book.
I actually
We don't hear anything from that, from his point of view. Like, why is he trying to save Ash Tyler? I don't know. He's just in there doing it.
I do disagree with you there. I do think that's the only time, besides the conversation he has with himself in the computer, where he is making decisions, where he goes to Laurel and asks her, "What is going on? This doesn't make any sense. Explain to me what's going on." And she says no, or she gives him a little bit, but not the whole thing. And then when it's decided that this happens off screen, which is, you know, we could have did a whole episode just about this. But they can't fix him, and he makes the call just to drop Tyler in her lap and say, "We can't help him. And he's going to kill somebody, so I'd rather he kill you in there."
Because you're in jail.
I mean,
it's like he could be any Starfleet schlub. Why does it have to be him?
No, it doesn't have to be him. He happens to be the guy in charge. But it does show some agency in the decision not to just kill this guy once they learned who he is. I mean, this is also a convenient thing, because when they pull him out of space, after he's executed by the other crew, and they pull him out just in time, he's not confused then, is he?
No, he's still Klingon, isn't
he? He's talking with his weirdo voice, and he's, "I'm Vulcan, you're, you know, killer." I hate to really say that on this. I don't know when Klingons got speech impediments. It doesn't make any sense to me. But what was I going to say? But like, then all of a sudden, now he's in trouble because his brain doesn't work anymore. And there is a little bit more going on with him in this episode, but I mean, barely. It's such a low bar that we're setting for these characters just to do something. You know?
Yeah. So I hope they stick the landing, because chainsaws are sharp.
Yeah. No, it doesn't seem. I don't. You know what? They're not going to, because they haven't yet.
Making the prediction.
Well, yeah, because they haven't shown any interest in doing it so far. I mean, one of the reasons why it was stupid to do a show that takes place just a little bit before Kirk and Spock is that you do have to get there. You know, they don't have to, but they've said, "We're going to get you there. Don't worry, fans. You know, we're not shitting all over this," even though they are. You know, we're still going to leave you off in a place where this all makes, you know, sense to you nerds in your little kingdoms. And they really think they're doing that. Just like they think that, you know, having stuff happen to characters is the same things as having characters do things. So they've shown no interest in giving anybody any agency in the show, and no interest in sort of having anyone, you know, sort of drive home a overarching plot. They've wanted to show you these people. They're bad at this, and they're not going to get good at it tomorrow.
I hope so.
They didn't make 12 episodes of this show a certain way poorly and then decide to make the last four or five episodes in a way that's less poor. You don't get good at this midway through.
Well, I mean, they do start to get a groove.
I mean, the groove would have to be a whole other season, because like the only way to make this work, and I can't even think of a way to make this work now. Not that I've said that out loud, but like you would have to. What the hell would you do to fix this? This is a mess, and I really like I'm trying to think of an answer that would satisfy my argument that they're not going to do what I want them to do. But I can't even think of what they would do here.
I mean, I couldn't figure it out in about 10 seconds. But you'd have to get out of that mirror universe, and you'd have to have something to show for it. So get a new Lorca, and that old security officer, Commander Stupid. She's back.
Right. I watched the preview. I was like, yeah, Commander Stupid's back.
Yeah, like maybe bring her back. Yeah, you have to have something for you have to show something for being there instead of just, wasn't that weird? You know, like it was so odd that we had the wrong captain all this time. Like there has to be some sort of reason to have gone and to change it and to bring it back to the Klingon War and say, in another universe, Klingons and humans are friends. No, strike that. Reverse it. Klingons and others are friends, and people can change and be different if they want to, and magic things can happen if we just find common ground and bring those lessons back to the regular universe. Maybe. It's a hard sell. It wouldn't happen in one episode.
Yeah. But yeah. I think overall you're right. You have to pull something out of this experience. So for a while I thought it was going to be the doctor's partner, Stamets' partner. They were going to pull him back, but no, that wouldn't make you wouldn't want to pull the.
It's awfully bright in sick bay.
Yeah, so you couldn't pull him, but like you don't want to bring evil people back with you, right? You want to bring back people. So I think the lady who got herself killed with her own hubris in the first couple episodes, who they find again here, I think that's the good girl, the good one.
I guess so.
And the one who died was because like
was the dumb one, right?
Right,
the evil one.
Yeah, the evil, because she was like Lorca's right hand man.
Let's just shoot that monster that's about to rip me open.
Yeah. So the one they find there in that preview at the end of this episode, that's so. If there's one person like that, then do they find Lorca, or is it just that no, there's no more like Lorca killed good Lorca. It's all evil Lorca, and like they got to come out of this experience, wrap it up, because like you know this is it. The end of the season is the end of this story, and we tell a new story next season with the same ship. Like, but who becomes the captain? Like,
I don't know. And I don't even mean like bring people back, although they should, I guess. They just have to take something away from the experience. Because in those old mirror episodes, there was always just like a shrug and you're off. Like meeting your weirdo doppelganger had no effect on people, which was because it was meant not to be taken that seriously. But this one clearly is. It's meant to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
You know, they ruminate on what they would be like if they had different opportunities and stuff. So that should affect you profoundly when you leave, assuming you get out of there alive. So besides Michael Burnham, because she's always thinking too much, but you know, what does Tilly get out of this? A sense of confidence that there's a version of her out there that could be a captain, you know, something for God's sakes. Maybe Stamets will lighten up. Cause like, oh, that's the evil Stamets. He just met himself. I'm like, yeah, that's just like the Stamets we met in the first 8 episodes. He was a bag. You people have short memories.
So this is the more evil Stamets.
Yeah. This one sneers.
And tells really bad jokes. Mm. So, all right. Well, so much for a microbrew. This is like 40 minutes in. But it's smaller than our usual hour. So it's right. Technically not. So this is more like a flight of beers.
Yes. It's a bottle podcast.
Right. A 22.
We have to go out of our home. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, share your thoughts with us about what you think of this show and where it's going, if it's going anywhere. You can do so on Twitter at 3DrinksInPod, on Instagram at 3DrinksInPodcast, and on Facebook And you can email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to look for us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Tell your friends, leave a review. And that's it.
That's it.
See you all next time, everybody.
See you next time.